Welcome to Pods of Conservation, where we discuss the natural world and all of its wonders. Here we bring the natural sciences to you, with an emphasis on building public trust, improving scientific literacy, and fostering community engagement in the conservation of our natural ecosystems. My name is Matt, and I live in the Hudson Valley of New York State. For work, though, I commute to New England, where I go aboard commercial fishing vessels at various ports to take data about what fishers are catching. Such data includes bycatch composition and gear entanglements with protected marine life that I report to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, otherwise known as NOAA, where they use it for research purposes and quota management. My official job title is Fisheries Observer, because I am literally observing what fishers are catching. I take a lot of pride in my work, because it is all in the name of sustainable seafood and monitoring our fish stocks. Additionally, I completed my marine master's program last year with a focus in coral reef conservation. I love scuba diving, and I hope to have a future career that brings me underwater working with corals again. My favorite species of coral is Diploastria heliopora, which is found in the Indo-Pacific, and it forms massive colonies with polyps that are huge and shaped like volcanoes. And an interesting fact about coral reefs, many organisms found on them produce chemical compounds that have been used in treatments for cardiovascular disease, ulcers, leukemia, lymphoma, and skin cancer. And that's my introduction. I'm going to introduce now Desiree. Desiree, take it away.
Hello, my name is Desiree. I'm located in Washington State, which is Seattle, the West Coast. Sorry, I also have a master's degree in marine science. My specialty is marine mammal conservation. I'm a huge fan of orcas, and that's what actually got me into this, especially because of whales and everything related to it. Actual projects at the moment, I'm working on different volunteering projects, educating the public about why the conservation of the ocean is important. And all this is in Spanish that I've been doing it, so I am bilingual. And future projects, I hope, in which I can actually have my own nonprofit to study different type of whales in the Caribbean. My favorite species at the moment, because we can always change, is the polar bear. And a fun fact about polar bears is that they are marine mammals because they depend on the ice to hunt.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, Desiree. And now Amanda. Amanda, why don't you take it away?
Hi, I'm Amanda. I'm a shark scientist in Rhode Island. My specialties lie mostly in shark science, vertebrate paleontology, and wildlife photography with a focus on conservation. I'm currently doing volunteer work at the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy in Chatham, Massachusetts, which I also did last summer and fall. I've been looking for work or unpaid opportunities that will give me field experience before diving into a PhD in either marine biology or paleontology. I'm currently working on a scientific paper with a former professor about the microscopic tooth morphology of an extinct group of fishes called pycnodonts. And I'm working with an angler friend to tag sharks here in Rhode Island as part of NOAA's collaborative shark tagging program. My future projects will definitely have something to do with sharks, though I'm not limiting myself to them because shark science is a booming field. I'm very open to projects on other fish. I'm not a mammal person, even though I love all animals, but I do hope to tag sharks full-time or part-time one day. And if not that, then be a marine cinematographer for other shark scientists doing that same thing. My favorite shark species has to be the goblin shark, though it's extremely hard for me to choose favorites. My favorites list is about like 20 species long. Fun fact about goblin sharks is also hard to choose, but I think I have to go with their jaws. They have the fastest jaws of any fish and can protrude out at 3.1 meters per second to catch their prey, which is called slingshot feeding. If you would like to look it up, the research can be found online. The team was led by Professor Kazuhiro Nakaya.
Beautiful. All right. And last but not least, we got our final co-host, Monet. Monet, take it away and introduce yourself.
Hey, hey, hey. So this is Monet. I am in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I am a global project manager in the travel and tourism space, and I sit on my company's sustainability committee, which meets monthly. We focus on educating our employee owners on sustainability and make recommendations to our senior leadership team on ways that our company can be more sustainable, including creating and implementing a sustainable strategy. Currently working on a sustainable MBA. I have a master's degree in wildlife conservation management and marine science with a predator focus. My favorite species in general are predators, the misunderstood predator. They so need a champion today on both sea and land. Desiree, I'm so disappointed because you picked the species I was going to pick. I assumed you were going to pick an orca, so I went with the polar bear, which is absolutely my favorite. When you said that, I sat here going, I'm going to hurt her. What the hell? So my fun fact is, even though a polar bear looks white, their skin is black and their fur is hollow. And basically it reflects light instead of containing pigment. And that's how they're able to survive in the harsh, cold Arctic. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Matt, back to you.
So, now that intros are done, want to briefly get into a topic for the remainder of this episode?
I don't know. We could talk about our other favorite animals. We could talk about like what you think, or one of the things you think is really important to talk about. So, like, let's say the thing that comes to my mind is benthic trawling.
Okay. Benthic trawling is a great thing to start off with because that's like the main gear type I work with. I mean, this is obviously a compromise Noah made with the fishermen that they're allowed to benthically drag. I mean, it sucks. What sucks about it? It's so carbon intensive. It's extremely carbon intensive because they're dragging this upwards of 10,000-pound net, in addition to like a few more thousand-pound doors that are keeping the net down and dragging on the seafloor. Like, forget the environmental damage that causes, but they have a diesel engine for the boat itself. Okay. They have two winch engines, one for each side of the net to bring in the net back in. And so they're using literally three different combustion engines to do it. And then on top of that, they're dragging, so they're constantly using fuel. And I have to take economic costs every time I go, and it's like they use at least 4,000 gallons of fuel each time. At least 4,000 gallons.
Oh, my God.
Anyway. But yeah, benthic trawling.
Yeah, that's a huge carbon emission. But also, like, I feel like equally damaging is the damage they do to the seafloor. Because, like, there are scars, trawling scars on the seafloor from like 50 plus years ago.
Yeah, and then a lot of these fishing spots they're getting repeat dragged on like multiple times because it's where everybody goes. It's where the amalgamation of species that they're targeting happens.
It's nice to talk to someone about it who's experienced it firsthand.
And it sucks because there's so much. I deal with so much bycatch too. Like they catch so much stuff that they aren't targeting. There are a few. If they're targeting things like pollock and haddock, more pollock and redfish. Sorry, the toes tend to be cleaner. And I've actually been impressed where they caught just pollock and there was very little bycatch. And when there's very little bycatch, I have very little work to do. I can. Oh, okay. Because my priority is to take accountant of the bycatch. But with flounders, flatfish, stuff that likes to stay hiding in the bottom, you're catching everything else that's like there as well. So yeah. Like
that's horrible. Like so, if you think about it as a species, like you're just minding your own water in your house, and suddenly you know they just wipe out the whole thing.
Especially the winter time, they're hunting a bunch of lobsters, and the lobsters, they're going through a laundry machine. The lobsters are actually pretty resilient. They like stay alive when they're in the net, but then you just think about the life they're going through. They're basically going through like a washing machine And then they're getting, and then they're getting checked for eggs and for V notches to see if they're female. If they're female, then they get discarded. And one thing that isn't studied that much is like how traumatic it potentially is for the lobsters and how it might affect their life history and their life cycles as they go through the process.
I would also add commercial fishing gear and entanglement to the list. Yeah. And it's not far off from trawling. It's, you know.
Well, in my experience, working with trawls, there isn't actually that many protected species that get, at least in the nets I've worked with, the protected species we've brought up are dolphins, but they weren't killed by the trawl net. They were already dead because I have to actually, because I have to assess how freshly dead or moderately dead or that they are. And all the dolphins we've lifted up were moderately dead, which means something else killed them. But gillnets are terrible for protected species. I've had fellow observers who had to record 150 seabirds that got entangled in one gillnet string.
Oh my God.
Terrible for the observer, terrible work for the observer, terrible work for the fishermen who have to get these birds out. It's just terrible for everybody all around. And then seals. It mostly happens with baited gill nets. The birds go through the bait, and a lot of them are shearwaters, which dive down into the gill net. And once they're in the gill net, they're caught and they drown in the gill net. Unfortunately, that's with baited gill nets. But even with the unbaited gill nets, you got like things like harbor seals and stuff that are still going to get entangled in those, trying to get whatever's caught in them. So, I mean, it just sucks. anyone got anything else to say? I guess the theme became fishing gear.
Actually, I wanted to add to what Desiree was saying about bottom trawling. When you say it wrecks habitats, the general public tends to think of like animals, maybe deep sea sponges. But a big part of that I wanted to emphasize is all of the stuff in the sediment. So that there could be like bacterium and even carbon that's been held there that's now getting released into the water column. It will go up and into the air, and it doesn't just fall back down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's especially if it's in an upwelling area where there's all this, where the currents are going up anyway to bring everything up. And upwelling areas are where you have a lot of fish and stuff that they're targeting, because that's upwelling is what causes nutrients to go up to the surface. We can definitely talk about this at length in another episode, but this was a great thing to bring to light for the latter part of this first one. Being conscious of time, we'd now like to wrap things up. Thank you so much for listening this far into our pilot episode of Pods of Conservation. Each episode, we would like to conclude with an outro of opportunity. Most podcasts, especially educational ones, tend to just disseminate info from a conversation. Amanda, Monet, Desiree, and I would like to take this a step further and encourage our audience to participate in both the conversation and the conservation. I started really caring about the natural world through a coral reef internship that I did in Thailand nearly a decade ago, where we did hands-on activities every day. We scuba dived, did underwater surveys, artificial reef deployments, sea turtle head starting, and so much more. I wholeheartedly believe that participation in such conservation activities will get people to care more about the natural world than simply disseminating information. And this is where our outro of opportunity comes in. We are going to present to you a real-life conservation activity or event that you can participate in to make a real impact. And for this episode's outro of opportunity, we feature the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy's Sharktivity app, which is a tool for reporting white shark sightings in Cape Cod and the surrounding areas. The app utilizes input from the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries, the Cape Cod National Seashore, and town officials to bring real-time white shark tracking to residents and visitors. Its many tools help people navigate real-time shark activity via data from sharks that have been tagged with acoustic and or spot tags. And acoustic tags can remain on a shark for up to 10 years. Anyone can create a report with or without photos and upload it to the app, which is then verified by the New England Aquarium. Reports include visual sightings and even seals with shark bites, even if the shark is not present. These reports are vital for human safety, shark conservation, and research purposes. The Conservancy's main goal is peaceful coexistence between humans and white sharks in the area, and whether you are a resident or just visiting, you can help facilitate that. Aside from reporting the sightings, you could log into the app to check white shark activity from within the last 2 days, week, month, or year. And it is available on www.atlanticwhiteshark.org/sharktivity-app. And it is available on both iPhone and Android. The website again is www.atlanticwhiteshark.org/sharktivity-app. And don't fret if you aren't going to be in the Cape Cod area anytime soon. Future outros of Opportunity will feature conservation events and activities from different localities, or might even be fully virtual. So just keep listening, and maybe you will find an opportunity near you. We will now move on to the credits, but if you stick around to the very end, we will preview what's coming up for the next episode. This episode was created, produced, and hosted by Amanda, Desiree, Monet, and me. Editing and sound design was done by Amanda and me. Our branding, logos, and cover art were done by Monet. Marketing, promotions, and social media were done by Desiree. And our theme music is Documentary by 331 Music. Thanks again for sticking around. We are just getting started with Pods of Conservation. And you all may have noticed Shark Week and other shark awareness events going on this past July. Next episode, we feature a conversation with our resident shark expert and co-host, Amanda. 50 years after the movie Jaws came out, how has public perception changed? Why aren't there any more megalodons? And what exactly is NOAA's cooperative shark tagging program? And how can one get involved? We have so many questions for her, but we want to hear from you too. Email podsofconservation@gmail.com. or message us on Facebook or Instagram if you have any shark questions for Amanda. Then stay tuned on our social media pages for the release date. In the meantime, please go outside and enjoy what nature has to offer. Goodbye.